Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
When I was with the circus, I literally loved watching every single show, every time the show was in my town as a marketing director for 6 years. I never, ever got bored of the show. Within each show, though, I always had my favorite acts, an act that was just stellar. It was complicated, it was scary, it was fun, it was enthralling. Never, ever, ever got bored of those acts. Well, this is the way I feel about our guest today, Bill Eddy. In the field of family law, I have never met anybody like you, Bill, ever, ever, ever. Everything you have to say, which is all about dealing with high conflict, is so important, and your methods have been so useful to me and perfect to me, and I've referred them to all of my clients, and I constantly get back, thank you for referring this man, these books, his approach. So, Bill, thank you. Welcome again for your third time to the program.
Thank you, Judith. I'm so glad to be back.
And our guests will be extremely happy you're back. So the book that you just, one of the several books you just wrote, I think is perfect, which is BIF for Co-Parent Communication. BIF is an acronym, Brief, Informative, Friendly, and Firm, which you're going to explain in a minute. And co-parenting communication, as we all know, can be the most difficult communication of all, because we can't get rid of the marriage. We can't get rid of the divorce. It's the gift that keeps on giving through the co-parenting relationship, right?
Absolutely. And so we really wanted to concentrate on giving people a lot of examples, a lot of tips.
Well, the way you wrote this book, it's just logical and it flows. So if I may, I just want to start at the beginning and take people on this journey so that when they get the book, which is on Amazon, they will know what they're going to be learning. So you start with blame speak. Could you please explain that?
Well, blame speak is something we're seeing actually more and more in the world today. And it's really characterized by blaming other people very loudly, publicly, intensely. And we see many characteristics of it. It's really an all or nothing approach. It's all your fault. It's emotional. And so it really, you feel the weight of the other person's emotions coming down on you. They often involve other people. And I was thinking the other day, I was consulting with a woman who was dealing with, I don't know how long her divorce had been, 2 or 3 or 4 years, but, you know, they had a child in high school. And she said, my ex wrote an email and copied it to 100 parents at the school, basically trashing me for something that didn't even really happen. And so it's this idea of drawing other people in to gang up on someone. Blame, blame, blame. And when you think about separation and divorce, it's a situation where people are kind of struggling with what's my part, what's the other person's part. And so when someone comes along and just blame, 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 we're really thrown off guard, thrown off base, and don't know how to respond, and especially in writing, and that's what BIF was designed for originally, it was for writing, is people go, wow, you know, I don't know how to respond to this. Do I blame back? And a lot of people do that. Doesn't go real well. Do I ignore it? A lot of people do that, and that often doesn't go well. Or is there something in between? So it's really, in many ways, responding to blame speak that we came up with BIF.
You brought up such a good point, and that is, do I respond? Do I not respond? And if I respond, do I respond by hitting reply all? or just to the person with whom the allegations came through, the person. How do people even make that decision?
Well, that's one thing that we address in the book. And before I go further, I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Annette Burns, who's a family lawyer, and Kevin Chafin, who's a family counselor. And they both contributed a lot of examples and insights. So it was a real team effort. But what we say early in the book really is, think about, first of all, is this just between me and the other person? And if it is, is my response to try to get them to change how they think? And that may be something not worth trying. You know, you have to assess the situation, but when you're getting blame speak coming at you, it's usually not really about you. It's about the person who's doing the blame speak who can't restrain themselves, because blame speak is not problem solving. It's basically noise making and venting, and not something you need to really think, oh my goodness, I've made a mistake, because it's very disproportionate. So in many cases, you don't need to respond to that individual. But in some cases, you do. If there's a decision that needs to be made, if there's a problem that needs to be solved, but you need to turn it into a constructive discussion, not just blame speak and counter blame speak. If other people are involved, I often recommend that you do a BIF response, because they're not going to know what's going on. And if they see blame speak targeted at you, they're going to think, oh, it must be true because she never responded, something like that, or he never said that's not true. And BIF is really a good way to not get down in the mud, but still clear up misinformation.
So I just had a thought, kind of a hybrid of what I read in the book, what you just said. And before I go on, I don't remember, and if I was remiss in not giving your credentials, and I may have been at the beginning, I want to let everybody know Bill started out as a family law attorney, then became, I believe, a licensed social worker second, and a mediator third, or do
reverse,
I have to
reverse?
Mediator order. Second, licensed social worker third, which means not only does he have a handle on the law, but on the psychology of people. And then he has worked in the trenches with both people as a mediator, right? Okay, right. Just wanted to clarify that. All right, here's the hybrid I was thinking about. Well, let's just say it is a group of people who have been copied on the blame speak email. And that group of people is not necessarily involved in the issue at hand. Could there be a hybrid like this? One email goes out to everybody saying, I am going to address so-and-so's comments, but I'm going to do it directly with him or her. Thank you very much for understanding. Something like that, so that you address the group, but don't involve the group. What do you think?
Yes, that's very much the way to do it. And we have an example in here where someone says, you know, you've received an email about a private matter related to our divorce. Don't worry, you don't need to be involved with that at all. If you have any questions or concerns, let me know. Contact me directly. Something like that. So that people know you're dealing with it, but you're not involving them. And people appreciate, no one wants to be involved in someone else's high conflict divorce.
But, no one.
But when people are blame speakers, they want to involve the world against you. And that's, I think, the hybrid is a good way to put it. It's a way to respond that is, in fact, brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
And you said something on page 9. Here's what I'm reading. And we're still in blame speak. The key is not to overreact and instead to recognize and manage your emotions, because as the reader, oh my God, it's so horrible to see anything said about you that's negative in writing. And oh my God, it's in front of other people. So embarrassing and so easy to overreact.
Yes. Yes, which is one reason I want to make sure to mention. It's good if you can have someone else review your BIF responses, because sometimes you let something in there that you just don't see because you're so irritated, or just it slipped out, you know, without you being conscious of it. So that helps. I mean, it's often not possible, but when it is, especially if it's a big, powerful one, to a lot of people, it often helps to have it reviewed by somebody else.
That's a really good idea. I didn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. And what's, I'll give you a real quick, funny example. I was working as a family lawyer. I was working with a client who had a high conflict divorce. And at one point I had to write a letter to his wife's attorney, his ex-wife's attorney. And I sent it to him, says, is there anything we need to add to this letter? And he calls me up and he says, Bill, there's a sentence in here. If I had written it, you would tell me to take it out. And I just didn't know if you realized that sentence was in there. And I looked and was like, oh my goodness, thank you so much. So my client was the one reviewing my BIF response, and he had learned it so well, he caught one for me. So I think all of us, even as professionals, can benefit from someone else taking a look at something like this, especially if it's going to have a big impact.
I am so happy to hear you say that about professionals. You know, it's so funny. I have never, ever before worked in a business where I felt like I was walking on an emotional landmine. Yeah. On a daily basis. An emotional tightrope, if you will, if I were going to use one of my circus references. And I, too, get caught up if I have a client that wants to blame me for something that is completely unexpected, where no blame exists. There is not even a problem as far as I know. And I go through the same thing any spouse is going through. Oh, shoot, how do I handle this?
Yeah.
So I appreciate that you said that you even have received, been on the receiving end.
Yes, I think we're all more human than we want to admit, and we need to help each other out.
We really do. Okay, let's get to BIF. First of all, I love the acronym. It's cute. It's easy to remember. Please explain yet again, what does that acronym stand for?
Okay, so basically four things. Simple is brief. And by that, we typically mean a paragraph. You generally don't need to write more than a paragraph. Even if you've received a 2 or 3 page, you know, diatribe from your co-parent, that a paragraph is usually sufficient. It's informative, and this is key, that it's just straight information. It's not emotions, it's not opinions, it's not judgment. It's just a piece of information that relates to maybe a decision that needs to be made or something that needs to be clarified. And often, blame speak has distortions in it. Things that aren't true or exaggerated. And so a good BIF response just says, here's some information you may not have. Or just to clarify, here's some straight information. So that really takes out all of the emotion. The third is that it's got actually a friendly tone. And this doesn't have to be super friendly, but it could be a friendly greeting. Thank you for responding to my request. Or I hope summer is treating you well. Or something that's friendly and maybe a closing. You know, it's Friday afternoon, so you say, you know, hope you have a good weekend. Something positive, just to take it so it's not feeding the negativity that's come with blame speak. And by the way, you can use this whether the other person's doing blame speak or just as misinformed. It's still a Biff response is a good way to go. And the second F is firm, which doesn't mean harsh. It means you end the conversation. You end the hostilities. So you don't put any hooks out there like, what do you think of that, buddy? You don't want that. And so many times people just do that instinctively. So that's brief, informative, friendly, and firm.
One question about the firm part.
Yeah.
So too often when we humans write something, and this is really what we want, and we're pretty specific about it, in the Biff model, once we end with our conclusion, our firm, our whatever, we really should be clear, shouldn't we, about that being what we want and not go back and change our minds? Do you know what I mean?
Oh, yes. In other words, one of the things in general with co-parent communication is if you change your mind a lot, it makes it really hard to be respected for a decision you make because the other person's going to feel like they can talk you out of it. But I do want to mention with this, affirm, if there is a decision pending, you might say, that's my answer on this topic. Or if you need a decision from the other person, you might say, please let me know by Friday at 5, yes or no to this request, something like that, so that the other person just has a narrow choice, so you're not just saying, well, what do you want to do, opening it up wide. Keeping a narrow focus often helps reduce the conflict.
How do you get, and this is what I was thinking about as I was reading through the book, when you put a deadline that is your self-imposed deadline. It's not an external deadline that both parents have to deal with. It's a deadline that you as an individual needs to deal with, or even if maybe you both do. How do you say it without it sounding like an ultimatum? Because we are crippled by one thing in written communication, and that is the tone of voice is absent. And the tone of voice provides the perspective.
Yeah. So let's say the person's provided some information. I think of schedule change, trading days because of activities, and that comes up a lot. And so someone says, here's my request, that we switch Tuesdays next week with Wednesday or something like that. And so please let me know yes or no by Sunday at 5. And the reason for being that specific is often in high conflict situations, someone's angry, blame speak, all of that, is they don't respond to requests. And you're going, well, what should I do now? And so it's better to say, please respond, by Sunday at 5. Yes or no, then if they don't, they're disregarding your request and you decide what else you're going to do rather than just wondering. And so that's, I think, the benefit of a date and time deadline on decisions that need to be made. And sometimes it's going to be, let me know by Sunday at 5. And if you don't hear back, maybe you send a quick reminder and say, recall I requested a decision by now. Are you sure you're not responding? Please let me know. And then you decide what you're going to do. Maybe you're going to talk to your lawyer, or maybe you're going to go back to court if it's a big, summer vacation plan or something like that. Or maybe you're going to go, okay, well, you didn't agree by Sunday at 5, so I guess we're not switching Tuesdays after all. But if you don't have a date and time, we often find that things just drift, especially when people are upset.
I had a situation years ago, before I got into family law. I was with a relative, This is kind of a Biff thing. I think I had a little Biff in me way back when. You just named it. But let's see where this fits. Because I tried it out later in the middle of a family situation with parents and children. And one parent, bit of a narcissist, liked to control time. And in so doing, everybody else was flipped out. It compromised everybody's emotions and made whatever the event was horrible going into it. But so I had this experience where myself and another person were going to an Easter lunch at a restaurant. We got the last seating and we invited two people to go with us. Scheduled time to leave. And at that time, everybody was there. The fourth person decided to wash their car at that time, which meant we would have been completely late. So I just said, look, go ahead, wash the car. We're going to go so we get the seating, and then we'll just look for you to join us. Well, he didn't. We still went. We had a great time. And so I used that template in a parenting situation. And this comes up a lot with parents, friends of mine that say they may not be divorcing, but they have this issue. Family event involves a child. Certain time you have to leave the house. Time's been on the refrigerator. They've talked about it. Everybody's gotten dressed. Everybody's in the car, but the one person who just is not the team player goes upstairs to take a shower. Everybody's going to be late for the piano recital for the five-year-old. And I said, sitting in the car, why don't we just go? There are literally three cars here, two left for the person in the shower. He knows where the event is. Just say, we'll meet you there and we look forward to it and not get mad. Yeah. Is that kind of a Biff in motion?
It really is, because it's brief and it's just straight information. We're going, you know, we look forward to seeing you there. It's friendly. And it's firm. We're not waiting around. We're taking action. So I would think that's a Biff. And I want to mention, you can do Biff verbally. Even though it was designed for in writing, you can do that verbally. And that might be a good example of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Thank you. I feel like a graduate of Biff here.
There you go.
Because it's so wonderful. And I mean, I know we're going to get, I'm getting off track just for a second, but you did open with this earlier, and that is, we live in a high conflict world.
Yeah.
My gosh. I mean, your book on politics was phenomenal. I absolutely just loved it. But it's politics. It's the pandemic has changed so much about how people relate to one another. Vaccine, no vaccine. I mean, everything's an argument anymore.
Yeah.
And I think this is great. The extended Biff, the extended use of Biff is phenomenal. Okay, goals. I thought this was interesting. What is your goal in writing, in responding?
Yeah.
Talk about that, please.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, it comes with the question of, do you respond? And if so, to whom? So if you're trying to change your co-parent's mind on a subject that they're not going to change on, then that may be a response you just don't even need to do. You can just ignore. They were maybe letting off steam, because a lot of blame speak is just letting off steam. It's venting. But your goal, then, let's say you do decide you need to respond. You need to clear up some information. Am I clarifying things? Am I making a request? And so, if so, can I narrow it down to a yes or no question? But if you're clarifying information, maybe your goal is to have a paper trail, especially if you're likely to end up back in court someday. You know, there's so many email correspondences in family court these days. And the irony is, I was on a panel discussion once, with a judge. I think they were all judges except for me. And it was about emails, the discussion. And the one judge read an email correspondence, and each parent in the email was saying that if we go to court, the judge will see how ridiculous you are being. And both sides were talking like that. And the judge said it's like twins talking to each other. And so the question is, do you want to write something just to protect yourself if you do end up in court to show you responded? Because sometimes people say, well, she never responds to me. And it may be because what you're writing is ridiculous, but you may need to respond, and a BIF response is a really simple way to do that. So deciding, do I respond or not? Do I clarify something? Do I request something? And then another decision is, do I copy anybody? And so I have a belief in general is to keep the conflict small. And so you don't want to necessarily copy other people unless they have been copied on another email that you're responding to, in which case you may want to copy them so that they know the more accurate information. So, you know, the woman I was consulting with, whose husband sent it to 100 other parents, I suggested that she would want to try to respond to them as well in a very short paragraph that says, you don't have to get involved, don't worry, I'm taking care of this. And often I suggest that. I think that's a good idea, to respond to the same people that got the initial one. One thing I want to say is, a BIF, it's not always a BIF response. Sometimes you're starting a conversation. And that's especially where keeping it small is really much better. Don't copy people unnecessarily.
Two things with all of that. Do you ever find that people may be blind copied on an email so the recipient doesn't even know?
Yes, yes. And often that word comes back to the person. You know, hey, I was blind copied on that email to you last week, and it looked like the person was writing to a lot of people, not just you. Were you aware of that? It's like, no, I didn't know anyone was blind copied on that.
Oh, my God.
So, yeah, and that's a problem because then you can't respond to the blind copied people.
No, and then additionally, in terms of to respond or not to respond, that is the question. How about a day later, not even that day, A, to clear your head, the recipient, the one who is considering what to do, and B, maybe the other person might calm down a little bit?
Very good point. And frequently I recommend that. One thing I want to add to that was a great idea that Kevin Chafin gave us that's in this book that I hadn't thought of before. And he says, and I don't know if a client taught him this or he taught the client, but he says, when you get the hostile email, is rewrite it as a BIF email. Then respond to that instead of the hostile email. And I thought that was brilliant. Yeah.
Absolutely. That is. I never thought about that.
And it takes all the hostility out. Now it's just a business discussion. And if you look at it the next day, you may have forgotten what some of the angry words were, and all you see is the information that needs a response. And it's good practice rewriting other people's correspondence into the BIF format because you're not as attached to it because it wasn't yours.
There was something in the Blame Speak chapter about the temptation to respond in kind because it kind of gives you a little high for a minute. See? But that high, like any high, doesn't last long and sometimes makes you sick that you actually engaged in it. And that's why I was kind of thinking, if you can, if there's no real immediacy, like, hey, I can't pick Johnny up from school in an hour, can you? Okay, there's an immediacy to that.
Right.
But if there's no immediacy, waiting is great. I mean, the art of waiting, it's really an art.
You're absolutely right on that. And we encourage that too, because, you know, your brain gets stirred up by being, you know, attacked. And your brain, your amygdala says, you know, fight, flee, or freeze. And that really pulls all the thinking energy away from problem solving. And so being able to think for 24 hours gets you back to a much better perspective. So you're totally right on that. It's a very good suggestion.
I've been in the situation of being a recipient enough that I've had to get good at preserving my own self sometimes.
Yes. And what's interesting in this whole discussion is we're talking about co-parents, but we're also talking about professionals, because we're human too. We get triggered, we get hooked, and this really can help everyone. Just waiting a day, focusing on straight information, all of that.
Letting something else nice happen to you so you feel good when you go to write.
Yeah, it often becomes so much smaller. It's not such a big deal. Okay. One thing I want to mention about Biff is I've seen a lot of people early on in teaching this who've written pages and pages. They've spent days writing their response. And I say, just keep it simple, a paragraph. And people are like, oh, wow, it saves me all this time, as well as emotional stress and energy.
I know. I think with the writing part, this is interesting. I think on a good day, a lot of people have trouble writing, period.
Yeah.
Just putting their thoughts on paper. It's not easy for everybody. And you do have to practice at it, especially now if you're in a high conflict co-parenting situation. You really have to get good at putting thoughts to paper. It's just not everybody's strength.
Yeah. A lot of people are just getting the first word or two, like writing, handwriting something. And that's where text and emails have actually speeded up communication. So people write things without thinking.
Yes.
That's where, whoops, people get in trouble.
That's right. So I can't go on without reading an example from your book. That it made me smile, first of all, because it wasn't happening to me. But it's so typical that it's unfortunate, but it is. So here's an example you gave. It has to do with the school issue. So Dad writes to Mom. Obviously, there's two households now. What does Jalen need for school dress-up day on Friday? Mom writes back, you're such an idiot. The school sent home a whole flyer about dress-up day. If you had a brain in your head, you'd read things from the school and wouldn't have to ask me stupid questions. You've never done anything a good parent would do, and Jalen always suffers. This is not atypical.
No, it's common.
This is very common. And then you went on to write, Dad responds, look who's talking. The great mother who forgot to pick up her son from school twice last semester and left him standing on the curb by himself for an hour. And then Dad writes back later after he has a Biff moment. Okay, never mind. I'll find out from the school. I'm sorry, Bill. It's not funny, but it happens all too often.
It does. And what's sad is so much of public language has become blame speak. And so people hear community leaders.
Yeah, don't we?
Celebrities.
Yes.
Just all of this. And so this language is blame speak has really seeped into a lot of public language. And so it's seeped into a lot of divorce language. Yeah. And it's really sad because the children do suffer. But they suffer when any parent does it, not just when so-and-so does it.
What I think is really cool here, and I'm letting everybody know who's listening, Bill actually has a chart that he analyzes, a little chart you can go through. Is this brief? Is this informative? Is this friendly? Is this firm? And you go on to take this example that I just read to everybody, and you dissect it, and you give pros and cons on what is appropriate and what might not be appropriate in terms of response. And so this goes back to what I was saying a minute ago. Not everybody's a good writer. Not everybody is confident putting thoughts and words to paper. So I think this is really helpful.
And we have 28 examples. And actually, this is the first time we put this in a list in the back of the book. And I'm looking for the page number right now. So on page 219, and it's a list of examples. If someone's going, oh, well, we're having an issue about a medical appointment.
Right.
How can I respond? You can look up there and go, oh, okay, on page 88, there's an example. And we often give first a bad response, and then we give a biff response, so that they have example language. And so many times people I consult with say, thank you for the words. I didn't know what words to use. And they, can I copy your words? I say, that's fine, because we want people to do what works and make it easy for them. So this really has that.
This is really amazing. Yes, it has so many different examples of anything to do with school issues, scheduling, lateness, childcare, birthday parties. I mean, it goes on and on. Summer vacation, like every single thing you would have to deal with that could be problematic, but at least puts both parents in contact with each other, forcing communication, cooperation.
Yeah. And let me tell you a funny, great thing that goes with that. Is I was recently, well, actually, this is a couple of years ago because it was in person at a conference, and a lawyer came up to me and said, you know, my client's been using Biff for about a year now. And you know what? Her ex-husband is writing back like Biff's, and he doesn't even know what it is. But he's copying what she was doing. He finally realized this looks better. And so she taught her ex through her example how to write a Biff response. And now he's writing back and he says their communication's so much better now from both ends.
Oh my gosh, I didn't even think that was possible.
I know. I hadn't ever imagined that. I hadn't even suggested it. You know, be a role model for the other parent. And over time, it sounds like they may respond this way. Not all, but some.
Any kind of advance and help will do. That's wonderful.
I was very pleased to hear that. It's very satisfying to put energy into something and see it actually benefits people.
I'm really encouraged by it too, because a lot of mediators will try and model the way things could be said for the party sitting in front of them, even.
Yeah.
You know, hoping to change a high conflict settlement negotiation into something just calmer and more reasonable. So I'm so happy to hear this, that it's really possible for one of the two parents to model a communication behavior that could possibly be picked up by the other parent, and they're doing it without making the other parent feel guilty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's a great thing about Biff, is it's a way of communicating that doesn't have little subtle digs in it. It's just straightforward. And that makes it easy to copy. And that's a good thing.
And you know what a subtle dig is? You know what? I'm going to take the high road. Here's what I'm going to say, because I'm taking the high road. You know, well, there is no such road called the high road. I've never seen a sign for it. I've never seen it. That, and please comment on this. If I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. But that type of a comment in and of itself has ego in it to me. Because if you're going to take an approach that that is intended, back to the goals, that is intended to calm things down and make things easier going forward, there's no need for, I'm going to take the high road, which means I'm better than you.
Right, right. And that's what, you know, we have is a straight information. That's all. You need to leave everything else, just straight information. We have what we call the three A's.
Which I was going to get to next. Great segue.
I was thinking you're leading right into that.
Well, we're flowing with the book here.
Yeah. So advice, admonishments, and apologies. And let me just start with advice. So many times I've seen people say, let me give you some advice, buddy, in the middle of their Biff response. And that doesn't work. That doesn't help. So we tell people, just pull that stuff out. Giving people advice isn't what a blame speaker was looking for. So that's going to offend them. And especially, you know, I've done some consultations with parents and adult children between not a divorce, but just parent and adult child. And parent and adult child both want to say, let me give you some advice. Let me give you some advice, Johnny. Let me give you some advice, Mom. You know, get off my back or whatever it is. It doesn't help. Admonishments are talking down to somebody. And in a way that what you just described, I'm going to take the high road, to me sounds like an implied admonishment. It's like, you are lesser than me. You're not taking the high road. So I would think of that as an admonishment. The last one, apology, is tricky. People wonder, because apologies in general are a good thing. I'm totally for apologies with 80% of people. But when somebody's blaming you, it's not really a good time to be apologizing unless that's the only issue. And, you know, you forgot to do something and, you know, so if that's the only issue, maybe you might put that out there. But what I've seen is people apologize for something small to calm down the other person, and the other person uses it as ammunition every other time you talk to them. Now, remember when you said it was your fault? And so better not to put an apology in a Biff response. There may be a place for it, but not in a Biff response, especially because it's in writing and they're going to hold it up against you. And I've seen that happen so many times. I saw a mediation woman, victim of domestic violence. They agreed. They both said, we can meet together. And the guy at one point pulls out a crumpled up note saying, remember when you admitted it's all your fault? You said you don't clean well enough. You don't cook well enough. And I instantly knew she's trying to calm down, you know, this guy who had been violent. And that's not the way to do it. And so, of course, she had separated. So now she was away from him. But he still carried that note. It was probably 2 or 3 years old. And that's why we recommend against apologies and Biff responses.
I'm so happy you made that clear, because I was going to ask you about it, but I don't need to now. You really did clarify. I am the great apologizer. Yeah. I mean, I think I'm on a constant apology tour my entire life. And I no, you're right about that. Yes, if you've done something wrong, I have no issue. If I've done something wrong, if I've hurt somebody inadvertently, the apology is right there. But yeah. What a good point you just made, because the blamer is always looking for wrongful behavior. We're not going to get into psychology now, but there's an issue going on with the blamer that they need to do that, right?
Right. It's not about you. It's the blamer. And that's part of their blaming. I've seen so many situations, even in mediation, people say, well, I can't go further unless you apologize for what you said to me yesterday. And what the person said was, we need to stop discussing this issue. See, you cut me off at the knees. No, I said, and it's just, you know, it's when people are blaming and in a blaming mode, and maybe that's part of their personality, they're wanting people to apologize for stuff that really belongs to them. And so that's why we want to steer clear of that in BIFF responses.
And so the part of the BIFF, B-I-F-F, that would negate the apology but deal with the issue would be the informative piece?
Yeah. Yeah. In other words, the three A's are things that often seep into the informative piece that aren't really informative. So that's why we, with our checklist, as you described, we have in there, we go through, is it brief, is it informative, is it friendly, is it firm, does it have any advice, does it have any admonishments, does it have any apologies? So it's important enough to screen those out.
Absolutely. So now I want to ask you about something that's so extremely important. It comes up all the time when there's a divorce from a marriage that is a standard cultural marriage where one person works and they make enough money to support the family and the other person stays home and raises the children and they become the domestic managers, so to speak. Now the divorce, and we have to do the co-parenting plan. The person who's been in the domestic manager, you call them the gatekeeper. It's very hard for that person to give up not only time with the children, but the management of the doctors, the school, the activities. Let's talk about that, Bill, because you did it so well in the book. How, A, please address the change that's about to happen, and how does the gatekeeper have to change with it?
Yeah, it's really tricky because I think you described a common scenario where people clearly had different defined roles, and now they're both co-parenting and usually both working, whereas for income out of the home, whereas one may have been the homemaker or the primary parent. And so every little thing almost needs to be redefined and clarified. And that's where there's a lot of times people stepping on each other's toes. So we have examples in there of doctor's appointments. That's one of the common areas. One person, I think, even in families where they had both parents were fairly involved and both parents were working outside of the home, doctor's appointments are often something one parent specialized in. And now both parents want to be involved with, well, the other parent wants to be involved with that. And the parent that's used to doing it is just going ahead, scheduling appointments without even thinking, oh, I need to discuss it with the other parent. So you get cases where, mom schedules a doctor's appointment and there's a follow-up appointment on dad's time. So dad, I've scheduled the appointment. I'm taking Janie to the first one and you're going to need to take Janie to the second one on your time Friday afternoon. And dad's angry. It's like, well, wait, you didn't even discuss this. And, who put you in charge? Well, history. And so it's ripe for conflict. And that's where BIFF responses can often clear them up. And we have good ways to end those conversations for the future in the book. I don't remember how many of those we have, but I know we have some.
You do, but you also said something in the book about approaching this topic, this ongoing relationship in the settlement agreement, in the custody section, where you define what the co-parenting schedule is, and it also has, and I would assume most custody sections, in whatever state you're in, that it's joint legal custody, which takes in medical and education, and one parent's supposed to inform the other parent when so-and-so needs to go to the doctors. So this is an enormous layer of communication that didn't exist before.
Right.
Now it has to exist. and you may have a high conflict situation going on. You're adding communication. And here's what I see happening, and tell me if you see this as well. Although the other parent who normally didn't go to the doctors wants to at least be informed, do you really find that they show up at the doctors?
It really depends. What I find is some want to be equally involved down to 50-50. It has to be exact. You know, you take one time, I take the next time. And others are like, well, I want to know about it. And if I'm going to be paying half of this, you know, I better know. But they don't have a schedule that will let them participate in doctor's appointments, for example. Or they're really not interested, and it's like, but tell me about it. And what we find is in separation and divorce, the need for co-parent communication is so much higher than it was during the marriage, because now everything has to be consciously done. Whereas during the marriage, people fall into routines and, oh, sure, go ahead. And they often don't even realize. That's the thing in divorce mediation. A lot of times people are saying, I don't understand our finances, or I don't understand the healthcare issues. It has to be, everything's made conscious. A lot of stuff ends up needing to be in writing, and that's where writing in emails is so common today, and even text messages. It's much more conscious than before. And the concept of gatekeeping, I never heard of until, it's been within the last 10 years. And yet, when you think about it, it's huge, because one parent's used to taking care of that, and they just do it.
Well, that's their pride center, I think.
Yes.
We could get into that more. They did it really well. They did it, and it was a lot to do, especially depending on the health of one child or the health of many children.
Yeah.
And it's not that parent, this is my thinking, and tell me where you're at with this. It's not that one parent enjoys doing all of it because it can be draining. It's just that was their identity.
Yeah. I think what happens is suddenly everything's being diminished. So if you were, you know, the primary parent and the other person was the primary breadwinner, you do take pride in that. That is a big part of your identity. And suddenly now we'll have the kids half the time. Well, that'll be easy. And you feel like, well, your whole life was just this little, simple, easy side thing, raising the kids. And so the person who wasn't doing that before and now is wanting or demanding or getting 50-50 is like, oh, this is easy. Yeah, I can take care of my half. On the other hand, it's like responsibility for finances, for example, all of that is like, that was a big part of who I was. And suddenly you're saying, well, I'll get a job, you know, I'll put in my part, and that's not such a big deal. And so everyone feels diminished in a divorce. And it's really sad, because the reality now, today, in the modern world, is this is a predictable transition. And if you compare it to changing jobs, which people didn't used to do, you know, 50, 80 years ago, and now we do it all the time. You have a party, goodbye, and good luck in your new job. And I think ultimately divorce really needs to have that kind of context. And I think BIF is one way to do that. Just make it okay, make it matter of fact, make it friendly. And we don't need to have all this anger, resentment, and diminishment of each other.
I love that you use the word diminish, because that is how it's even expressed. And I see it in mediations all the time. Well, what's so hard about that?
Yeah.
You pick up the phone, you make a call, you schedule an appointment, you go. Well, no, you have your own schedule. there are changes that have to be made. There's everybody's schedule has to be considered. And then if you are the gatekeeper, oh my God, now you have to consider the other parent's schedule on top of everything else you've had to do. And Bill, you know, I really agree. And I have to think about this now for the future. And that is, how do we as mediators get the parties in front of us not to diminish each other?
Yeah. It's hard because that's not, we don't talk about that much. We don't even think about it much. And yet it's an undercurrent that's constantly happening. Maybe we need to say that in our introductory comments that, mm-hmm. you know, we're here, you two are the decision makers. I have a lot of information, and mediation focuses on the future going forward. Court focuses on the past, what everybody did wrong. And we're here to help you, not diminish you. Maybe something like that would be good.
Yeah, I mean, that's really a tough thing. And, you know, for the gatekeeper parent, quite often, it's got to be really tough not only to redefine who you are and your role, but to feel comfortable that the other parent is going to do a credible job in part of what your role was.
Yeah. And you're not supposed to criticize how he or she does it.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
And yet he's doing it wrong. And one thing I want to say is gatekeeping in my mind isn't just around parenting, although that's where we hear the term. But if you think about it, each parent has probably an area that they're used to being the gatekeeper for, you know, the family checkbook, the finances, talking to the school, dealing with the house, or maybe you're renting something, that people split up jobs in most relationships. But now when the relationship's changing, you have to consciously do all of those decisions. It requires such a higher level of cooperation at a time when you really don't feel like it. And I think we have to have a lot more empathy for people going through divorce today, because it is in many ways so much more complex. If you think back 1970, 50 years ago. No, actually, let me back up to when I started practicing as a family lawyer in 1993. I think the statistics were something like half of fathers didn't see the child more than once a month. And now there's such a high level of father involvement with the kids and mother involvement in the workforce that the world has changed dramatically even in the last 30 years.
Very much so. I agree. To conclude, because we're getting to the end of our time,
yeah.
I think you actually addressed this a little bit ago, but chapters, I think, 5 through 10 deal with specialized areas on co-parenting and the way to deal with them. And those areas are the education piece, the healthcare piece, the children's activities piece, the finances, the changes to the co-parenting schedule, giving right of first refusal to the other parent, but not abusing that. That's huge, is it not? And then lastly, social media. And did you divide these sections up because there's a slightly different way of discussing them? Why did you make them each their own areas?
I think we wanted to give examples in each of these big areas of controversy. And so we felt like they each deserve concentration of their own. In general, the format didn't change. It's still brief, informative, friendly, and firm. but the language, the words to use, the common issues, we wanted to be able to spell those out. And we wanted it to be a resource so someone can say, okay, we're looking at, I need to change, make schedule changes. Let me see if I can find some nice language to start my request with. And so a whole chapter on that. So we really looked at what are the biggest trouble spots and how to give each of those attention. But the format didn't change. It's the same format. It's just the specific content for each of those disputes, which are so common.
They are. I hate to backtrack, but if I wanted to mention one quick thing to parents and have your input, and this was back in gatekeeping, and it had to do with finances. So you have a section on finances. Finances, insofar as they affect the health care, because so many, there are things not covered by the health insurance, and so each parent has to participate. And the changes to, I think the changes to the parenting plan. But it has to do with, let's do the finances first quickly.
Sure.
That's something that the former provider seems to really get upset about, probably understandably so. Don't just give me a bill. Don't just tell me that, oops, I forgot, I'm so used to doing it. You know, I need to know ahead of time, not that I'm arguing about paying half. I just don't like to be given the bill.
Yeah.
Could we talk about where that area of sensitivity is so that the one who's really handling the appointments for the most part can just understand why that's important?
Well, I think it's kind of fits with our earlier conversation as people are used to making the appointments and one person used to paying for things. But now everything should be more equal and they feel offended if you just make the appointment without telling me about it. And if you expect me to just pay without knowing about it, I think there's an expectation for much more consideration from each other at a time when people don't want to give each other more time and energy and consideration. But I think sometimes parents feel like they're really taken for granted. Just send me the bill and I'll pay it. And so, for example, healthcare is so much a 50-50 thing. I mean, under the law in California, it is 50-50 specifically. And I think most states are similar with that. And so it becomes an area of controversy when people don't know or they don't agree. And what's interesting, and we have in here an example, is orthodontia, because that's usually not paid by insurance. And that can be a big number. And so let's say mom says, okay, Dad, you know, you need to chip in your $1,500 now. And Dad was like, you know, well, the child's only 9. They don't need orthodontia now. And they're supposed to agree on health care. And so you have all these controversies that can flare up. But the key, I think, is frequent, simple communication and keeping out all of those judgmental words or little digs. And then people can solve these problems. Most people do. I've been in court on people not paying their health stuff, and that's very rare. I think of a case I had like 20 years ago, and the father hadn't paid like $6,000 in healthcare reimbursements, and mom took him to court and he just wasn't going to bother with it. He didn't go to court, and the judge ordered he pay it plus, I think, 10% interest plus 6% interest, because in court there were two, you know, you're supposed to pay it once person makes the request, and if it ends up the judge deciding, then you get kind of double interest, something like that. And it just, people got stubborn.
Yeah, I this couldn't be a harder situation, but I love the fact that you said one woman actually modeled Biff communication and her husband picked up on it and did it. So that gives me hope for the future. I love that. It gives me hope for the future. Okay, Bill, you're not mediating anymore, but you are counseling and or coaching?
I'm consulting.
You're consulting. Okay, sorry.
So I'm not counseling, which I did do for 12 years as a licensed clinical social worker. And then as a family lawyer, represented clients in court as a certified family law specialist for 15 years. And over the course of all of this, I was mediating, and I finished 40 years in December 2019. So now I'm consulting, which isn't counseling and isn't legal advice, but I'll take a whole scenario and give tips and strategies. I consult with individuals going through divorce. I consult with lawyers dealing with their family law cases because I do a lot of training with judges as well as lawyers, counselors, and mediators. I can give people tips on strategy. So I'd say it's not so much coaching as consulting because it's really about strategy. And there's a lot I've learned from these three different professions of counseling, law, and mediation.
I bet.
And I think I have a good big picture that can be helpful to people. So I'm glad to do that as well as training and writing.
For people to enjoy as much of you as humanly possible, they can go on Amazon easily and look at all your books, but I bet your whole library of books, is it on the High Conflict Institute website?
Yeah, so you can go to the highconflictinstitute.com website. There's articles, there's books, there's a store in the top menu. I think it's store or products. It's changed over the years. And it links to Unhooked Books, who publishes just about all my books and distributes all of them.
Okay.
So they can go to our website or Amazon. We're just happy that people get the books.
I am too, because I can't tell you, Bill, seriously, every single time I have referred one of your books or taught people the Biff method, without fail, it has really helped them. So I want everybody to enjoy and benefit from your work and everything you have to teach. Bill, thank you so much. Will you come back again?
Oh, I'm happy to. I always enjoy speaking with you, Judith. So it's such a great discussion. The time just went by like that.
Thank you.
I'm always happy to come back and discuss this stuff with you.
I really appreciate it.
And for the work you do, because you're really giving a lot of people good information.
Well, it's important work, and I'm happy to put my life in the line of fire to accomplish this for people. And I want to thank everybody listening yet again. I appreciate each and every one of you, because the information we provide on this show is beneficial to you and the world. So thank all of you. Any topics you would like me to cover that I have not thus far, you can reach me through this website, theamicabledivorceexpert.com, theamicabledivorceexpert.com, and talk to you next week. And as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.